Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. What is the secret to a longer life?
So that's the question we posed to a group of centenarians last week at a so-called Party of the Century in Boston. And here's a bit of what they said.
I kid around when I tell everyone. They say, well, what's your secret? I said, one doer's on the rocks every night before dinner.
How do I do it? I used to love to sing. And when you sing, you never cry.
Well, I think the main thing is what you put in your mouth.
I agree. There's some secrets about longevity from a group of centenarians in Brookline, Massachusetts. They were talking to Carrie Goldberg, who's here, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. She joins us now. Hi, Carrie. Thank you for being in here. Tell us, you met these centenarians at a party of the century, their century. Tell us about the event and what you heard from them.
Well, first of all, it was a party of about a dozen centuries. In fact, there were more than a dozen people who were 100 years old or older. And they were very fun and inspiring, and they were also very gracious about answering these questions that they've been asked about a billion times, which is, how did you do it? What's your secret? And those voices that we were just hearing now, one of them was Anne Stone, who is 99. She's the one who believes in the drink on the rocks every night, but she's actually joking around there. What she really said is that she's been very athletic her whole life. Like, she played tennis until she was almost 90, and she thinks that that's the trick. And then there was Max Siegel, who's almost 103. And he likes to say that it's singing that's kept him so spry. But actually, he told me he was married to a really wonderful woman for over 60 years. And I pressed him a little bit about whether there isn't some downside to growing so old. But he says, really? No. And he sang at the party. And the oldest person there was 105-year-old Sadie Snyder. She had a fascinating story, too. She didn't get married until she was 60 for the first time. And then she stayed married for 32 years. And she's the one who thinks it's what you put in your mouth. She says she's been a vegetarian for a long time, and she thinks that food is the secret. Though I should add that her relatives say very fondly that they're sure that her secret is her monumental stubbornness.
Her stubbornness. So personality, liquor, love, music. How many people 100 and older are there in the state of Massachusetts?
So according to the 2010 census, there were about 1,500 of them. There's probably even more now.
So let's welcome Dr. Thomas Pearls. He's founder and director at the New England Centenarian Society at Boston Medical Center. And Dr. Pearls, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks a lot.
So what do we know about what makes people live this long? As Jill just mentioned, we've heard about food. We heard about doers. We heard about marriage. We heard about eating vegetarian. What do we really know?
Well, to get to 100, it's going to be a combination of probably pretty good health habits and some genes. To get to 107, 110, it really becomes a story of genes.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I had a family doctor for many years, and he said when it comes to longevity and health, he said the most important thing you can do is to pick the right grandparents.
Or parents, but we got to figure out which.
Start somewhere.
Yeah.
Or siblings, right?
Yeah. But I mean, so here's a question. These people all sounded like they're having a terrifically good time being 100 and 100 plus. But when we talk typically about folks who are 100 years old, how healthy are they? I mean, what's the quality of life?
Yeah, you know, when I was going through medical school and even my geriatrics fellowship, we really were brought up in that environment with this idea, the older you get, the sicker you get. And when I was in fellowship, actually working at the Hebrew Rehab Center for Aged, I had a couple of centenarian patients, never had them before, and I thought they were going to have every age-related disease under the sun, have dementia, certainly be on death's doorstep, and they were the opposite. Not all centenarians are like that, and I was lucky these two were, because that made a light bulb go off. And in fact, down the road, now 2012 or so, we had been working very hard on recruiting not just people 100, but people we call super centenarians. Those are people who live to 110 and older. We actually have the largest sample of super centenarians in the world in our study. We now have about 150 of them. They're very rare. They're about 1 per 5 million in the population. And they approximate human lifespan. The oldest ever, it was 122. Not in our study, but the oldest ever human. And she defined human lifespan. And there's a hypothesis.
She was French, wasn't she?
Sorry?
She was French, wasn't she?
Right, that was Madame Camus.
There's a factor in that, I believe.
All that red wine. But we'll talk about that. But there's a very famous hypothesis called the compression and morbidity hypothesis, that as you approach the limits of human lifespan, you have to compress the time that you're sick and you experience disability towards the very end of your life. Otherwise, how are you going to get there? And when we studied centenarians to begin with, and we had young centenarians, 101, 102, we saw many having age-related diseases for 20 or more years. But what was so good about getting to 100 is that they nonetheless delayed their disability well into their 90s. So they're already special in that even though they can have age-related diseases, they handle them differently, they're able to deal with them better, and they maintain their functional independence well into their mid-90s. The super centenarians, the ones who were truly approaching the human lifespan border, they were markedly delaying their diseases towards the very end, only living the last 5 years of their lives with diseases and disability. It was amazing, but it does prove this hypothesis. And the earlier studies show that if you do get to 100, you're living the vast majority of that time in good function. And the difference is, instead of the older you get, the sicker you get, we came up with this phrase of the older you get, the healthier you've been.
We want to talk policy here for a moment. I just want to ask you one question about a commonality. Was there any common thread about having a damn good attitude, you know, having an attitude that about life that Carrie and I were talking earlier, if you are optimistic at 25, you may be optimistic at 95. Does that carry you farther?
We do think it does. There's a great study out of Yale by a doctor named Becca Levy, and she studied optimism and things that correlate with it, and getting rid of those things that showed that optimism was an independent predictor of longevity.
Okay, so there's a boom in the number of 100-year-old plus in the coming years in Massachusetts and elsewhere. And the question is, Carrie, is society, either American or otherwise, ready for that? And what are some of the concerns that are coming up?
Right. So there's a boom actually of boomers, right? The baby boomers, this gigantic demographic bulge, is now getting into its 70s, and it will soon be getting up towards the century mark. And in fact, I think it's Dr. Pearl's projects that we could have as many as 2 to 4 million centenarians by about 2060. So that's a lot of much older people. A great many of them want to age at home, but the older they get, the more help they may need. And clearly society isn't fully set up to handle a wave that big of people who want to stay at home but need services in order to do that. Here's Ruth Ann Dobek. She's the director of the Brookline Council on Aging.
We keep talking about the demographics, but I don't think people, policymakers or our legislative body, has spent enough time on what does that mean? People want to age in place. They want to stay at home. They need services. And how are we going to address that?
So, for example, even something as simple as how do you get somebody from their house to the grocery store or the doctor's office, transportation, there are a great many issues, not even talking about are we going to bankrupt Medicare and Social Security and so on. But what I like about Dr. Pearls' work is that he focuses a lot on how relatively healthy the oldest old can be. Hmm. And it could be that, you know, the burden may not be as great as we may worry about.
Okay. So we'll get to whether or not many of us can become that oldest old in a moment, but don't have a lot of time left. Carrie, did you calculate on your own life expectancy?
Well, actually, the New England Centenarian Study has a calculator that you can use. It's at livingto100.com. And I couldn't resist trying it out. And I found, amazingly enough, that I would live to 100, though I have to admit I may have slightly fudged how much I weigh and how tall I am. But it's a very fun little tool to use.
So, Dr. Pearls, you know, if you Google anti-aging cure, you come up with something like, you know, 3 million hits, and most of them are obviously bogus. But what's the one most important thing, real thing, that the average person can sort of take away to do to extend their life?
Well, the key there, Anthony, is your word average.
Yeah.
So I think that the average bunch of us, everybody listening on the radio, has the genetic makeup on average of getting to about 90, which is amazing. It's what the Seventh-day Adventists do. A very mixed group of people, geographically and ethnically, But what they do in common is what gets them to this amazing age. And it's that they have remarkable health habits. And so what they're doing is that they're taking advantage of this amazing average set of genes rather than fighting them with things like smoking and bad eating habits and not exercising, so on and so forth. So if there's just one thing, it would be take advantage of what is already for most of us a remarkable set of genes by taking good care of yourself and mostly avoiding bad health habits.
All right. Dr. Thomas Pearls, director of the New England Centenarian Study at Boston Medical Center. He also is a professor of medicine at BU School of Medicine. Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health. Always a pleasure to have you, Carrie.
Thanks, Anthony.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR Boston, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Jill Kaufman.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.